It's been said that this world, is a farm for the next world. In other words, the seeds are planted here, but you don't see what grows until the next world. Now, in order to understand that, and in order to understand the consequences of that, you have to be able to see what you can't see with these physical eyes. You have to be able to comprehend things that are only available to you through faith. And if you don't have faith, you can't breach that gap of not seeing. You can't breach the gap of not having things shown to you in the physical form. To work on faith, to work on a belief system that has been implanted in us by the holy books and by the holy men, whether we've seen them, the holy men, or not, takes a level of spiritual closeness that not everybody has. But in the same way that if you don't till the soil in a farm, the seeds won't grow. And if you do till the soil and you water the soil and you put manure on the soil and you put all the nutrients into the earth that beckon growth, in the same way, you can develop a spiritual side and a spiritual closeness, even though you may not have one right away. The point being that we need to work on developing not only our worldly self, but developing our spiritual self. The Quran says that when we ask for blessings, we should say, "Protect us in both this world and the next world." So we need to understand that we have to make provisions for both this world and the next world. And since we're in this world, we also need to make provisions for the next world. In order to become close to that, in order to become close to your spiritual self, you have to understand the nature of this world and the nature of this existence and the illusory nature of the existence. Now, what does the word illusory mean? It means something that exists for a while and then disappears. Now, we all have experience in the world, and we've all seen things come and go. The most common thing that we've seen come and go are the people in our lives. Millions of people in the world come and go, and they go regularly. There's a movie called The Invasion of the Body Snatchers where people would just disappear. Well, that's a little bit what this world is like. People come, and then they're snatched. They disappear. Where do they go? What happened to them? Was this life the total sum of their existence, or was there more to it? If we believe the premise that this world is a farm for the next world, then we believe a few things. One, we believe things that happen here have some kind of an influence in a world that we don't see at this moment. And two, we believe that our existence doesn't end when this world ends for us. Now, we know as a surety because we've seen it so often that this world ends for us. It's an incredibly difficult thing to comprehend because the mind is incapable of understanding the demise of itself and refuses to deal with that possibility. Other parts of us know that the demise of the mind isn't the end. Now, this seems like a paradox because we're so used to thinking that the mind is what we are, but it's not. Let me give you an example. If you believe that the eye is the source of vision, then how do you explain what you see in dreams? You see, everything is not the way you think it is. Everything doesn't come from the places that you think it comes from and doesn't go to the places that you think it goes to. There's more that's unseen, unexplained, and unexplainable. The philosopher studies books, and from the study of books, memorizes things, draws conclusions, and repeats them. And he does it for a reason. He does it in order to aggrandize himself somehow in this world, to make money, to make himself famous, to make himself important. The Sufi learns in a different way. The Sufi follows the footsteps of his teacher, watches his teacher, begins to understand the essence of his teacher, tries to feel from where the source of what his teacher knows is. And when his teacher disappears, he doesn't go to books. He goes to the smell that was his teacher so that that same smell can waft to him and explain to him what was explained to his teacher. Because the Sufis don't use books. Their teaching comes from a place that's beyond books. And unless your life can become detached from this physical reality that we call reality, from the physical things that we see, unless you give this less credence, unless you make it less important, you can't go to that place that doesn't have books, that doesn't need books, that isn't associated with books, that isn't associated with that which is in this illusory world. There's a separate place. Now, what holds us back from leaving our attachment to this world? What does it is our own creation of a form that we believe is true. And this form is not necessarily a physical form. We create mental forms that we hold onto. And there are mental forms that hold onto the earth, and there are mental forms that leave this earthly realm and go towards the spiritual. And we need to know the difference. For instance, if you love richness, if you love gold, if you love earth, you are connected to the world. But a man who has the same amount of gold and the same amount of real estate that somebody who loves gold and real estate, may be in love with gratitude. And his gratitude is where his focus is, not what's in the world. If you can understand that shift, you can understand the paradox of being in the world and not being in the world at the same time. But you have to understand that shift. You have to understand where your allegiance lies and where your own personal belief system is gratified. And who creates this belief system? We do. And that's why the wise men have all told us that the veils that separate you from your Creator are of your own creation. So, we have to think about the things we think about. We have to realize the things that we're involved in, and we have to follow the path of those things to see where they lead us. For instance, jealousy is attached to what? It's attached to the thing. Anger is attached to what? It's attached to the thing, to the earth, towards the desire. These kinds of qualities and these kinds of attitudes are what create the psychic framework of illusion that brings us and attaches us to the world, because we've thrown our own line towards it with a hook on the end of it, and we've made that hook tie into the world, and now we're holding on to that line, and when that tugs, we get pulled. And we do it constantly. And it's easy to be able to trace the qualities in ourselves that do these specific things. Anything that we want, anything that we strongly desire, anything that we need, no matter what, anything that we'll do even though it's outside the realms of what's right and wrong, is like casting a line in the world, hooking it into the world, and allowing it to pull us in whatever way it goes. For instance, if you're attached to the stock market, when the stock market goes up, you're happy. When the stock market goes down, you're sad. It's not more complicated than that. And you can see the movement in the stock market pretty easily. It's like riding a wild horse. And you're not going to train it. However, if we attach ourselves in a different way, then we create a framework which allows us to build the door to reality, so that we can step through into what's true and what's not false. This is the way we get saved from praise and blame. This is the way we get saved from all of the harshness and the pain that the world causes. Because all of a sudden, our gratitude, our focus, our needs, our desires are in a different direction. Desires in the world and desires for the world will end in disappointment, because everything in the world disappears. And if you put your trust into things that disappear, eventually they're going to blow up on you. eventually they're going to somehow terribly disappoint you. Now, in order for us to set our priorities as a being, we have to know the difference between the things that are going to disappoint us and the things that can bring us peace. And we have to set our direction towards peace. Now, there's many different ways to do this, but most of it has to do with attitude. Now, it's such a simple word, attitude, but it's so difficult to create an appropriate attitude in yourself. If during your prayers you're thinking about what's the price of gold today, what's the state of your prayers? If while you're doing ablutions, you're thinking about the women that you may go out with or the men you may go out with, what's the state of your ablutions? A wise man once said, if God wanted those who wash themselves day and night to be the ones close to him, he would have chosen fish and frogs. If he wanted the ones who pray at midnight to be the ones who are close to him, he would have chosen bats. If he wanted the ones who wander aimlessly through the mountains to be the ones he loves, he would have chosen goats. But he didn't choose these things. He chose man. And what does he want from man? What is it that he's looking for from man? He's looking for the right attitude. He's looking for somebody who's chosen him and loves him, who's kind to his fellow beings, who acts appropriately when the situation to act appropriately comes upon him, who's nice. These are not such difficult concepts. But the world has real trouble with getting them straight and has gone totally out of its way to protect God by killing other people. The insanity of the way man is capable of turning things upside down and taking what is haram, forbidden, and calling it halal, or permissible, is beyond our imagination. Every religion seems to have lawyers, and the job of these lawyers is to somehow reconcile somebody's idea of what they want to do with what's permissible. And that's what they do. And if you go out into the marketplace, you can find a lawyer to defend any side of any question. And the same thing happens in the religious marketplace. You can find anybody to give you a reason for anything that you want to do, especially if you pay them enough. And what's happened is religion, which was supposed to be about the relationship between man and God, has become about the relationship between man and intermediaries to God. And not all of these intermediaries have God in mind. Not all of these intermediaries have developed the appropriate attitude. Not all of these intermediaries are doing what they're doing for a higher purpose. Many of these intermediaries are doing it for their own purpose. So whenever you're involved with anybody about spiritual matters, be very careful about what their intention is. what their purpose is, how much does it cost you, and what do they want from you. I was incredibly fortunate, and so were many of you here, to be with a teacher who didn't want anything from us. He just wanted to give to us that which he knew and which he understood. And he was able to convey it with an attitude that was incredibly loving, that allowed us, as wild as we were, to be able to be comforted and to be able to stay. You see, a large part of attitude is about being able to comfort others around you. How can you comfort yourself if you can't comfort others? How can you help others if you can't help yourself? How can you bring peace to anyone if you can't bring peace to yourself? We have to really look at who we are and why we are. And then we have to break down slowly what we have to do to get to be that which we were supposed to be. Every appropriate intention brings you closer to the steps of the true teacher. Every appropriate act brings you closer to the steps of the true teacher. Every act of kindness that comes from you is stronger than any prayer without intention. We need to do what's right in order to become what's right. And then, as all of these things come closer to the godly attitude, the godly way, what happens? God comes closer to you because you've come closer to Him. And then, as the Sufis say, the smell of the musk becomes prevalent. The truth flows through your nostrils, and all of a sudden, you're explained divinity through the sense of smell. You see, things don't happen just the way we think they happen. The senses can do things beyond our imagination. In both directions, we need a gyroscope of sorts inside of us that centers us. It's said that it's better to be with a snake than with a fool. Why? Because you know with the snake, if you have any intelligence, what to expect and what you're going to get. But with a fool, there's no center. And he may get you from the side or from the back because you won't expect it. So if you have foolish friends, try to decrease your association with them because it's going to get you into trouble. Not necessarily of your own making, but you have to realize you need discretion in your life. And if you can't tell the difference between idiocy and normalcy, don't you in fact help the idiocy get close to you? We need to constantly be able to turn around and look at our being. Look at what our being is doing and why it's doing it. And if we stop asking why of ourselves, that means that we've allowed the witness inside of us who's doing this watching to go to sleep. And you can't let it go to sleep. If you don't stay cognizant of the state of your being, the state of your attachments, the state of your self-interest, the state of your motives, the state of your reaction, the state of your centeredness, the state of your ability to stay straight, who's in control? And who have you let control go to? Now, you should know that in our lower half, we have a whole bunch of personalities who want to take control of our being and shut our conscience down because they can't exist in the realm of conscience. They can't exist in the realm of the truth of light. And it's not like some of us have this and some of us don't. We all have it. And we're all influenced by it. The prophet was asked, do you have this lower self? Do you have these, in Islamic terms, it's called the nafs. Don't you have this nafs? And the prophet said, of course I do. But I've trained mine to be Muslims, which means I've trained mine to be believers, which means essentially that he's bound them within certain rules and regulations. And this is what we have to do to ourselves. We have to bind ourselves within certain rules and regulations. And this is the beginning of the path. Until there is some kind of minute-to-minute observance of our own acts and a judgment as to whether they're right or wrong, the animals in us will begin to run wild because nobody, the trainer, isn't home. We need a trainer inside ourselves. We need to train this lower self. We have to get it under control. And as we get it under control, we can begin to do away with the psychic nature of illusion that holds us and traps us into believing that the world is real. If you are jealous of someone, how can you believe the world's not real at the same time? You see, the jealousy, in essence, is telling you that this illusion or this thing is so real that your emotional output has to be focused on it. It's what holds you and presses you against illusion. Strong desire for anything, obsessive desire for anything, does the same thing. How can you say to yourself, this world is not real, when every essence of your being is trying to obtain something in it? We need to understand this about ourselves, and we need to know how we reinforce illusion, how we make it real to ourselves, and what we have to do to negate it from our being. It's not easy to go on the path of abstinence, and it's not required to go on the path of abstinence. This is a path of moderation. And in moderation, you begin to understand that you have a worldly side and a spiritual side. But it's only when you can moderate the worldly side that there's room for the spiritual side. If you become gluttonous on the worldly side and you have to have everything, or even if you don't get it, that have to doesn't leave you. See, it's not about what you get. It's about what you have to. It's about that pull and the strength of the magnetism on you in it.
You have to eat when you're hungry.
You have to eat to stay alive. And you have to eat in moderation. But you have to do everything in moderation. And that's why Islam is called a middle path, because it's not trying to make you a fanatic. It's trying to place into you the appropriate attitude towards things. And Allah has told us that He's not going to give us any burdens that are too difficult for us to handle. So that which He places in our way, we can carry. Carry it with moderation. Carry it with the amount of attention it requires. Learn how to dispense your attention appropriately. Learn how to, in each day, not only give your obeisance to the world, but also give your obeisance to God. Jesus said, "Give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and give unto God what is God." And Bawa tells this incredible story about this man who came to him and who came to the prophet and said to the prophet, "Satan keeps chasing me. Get him off my back." And so the prophet called Satan and asked him, "Why are you chasing this man?" He says, "Why am I chasing him? He wants all the things that are mine. And I'm just making sure they're well taken care of." In other words, if you want what Satan's, who's going to be near you? And who's going to come to guard what belongs to him? As we walk through our daily situation, from moment to moment, we can't compartmentalize those different moments. We can't say that at 10 o'clock on Sunday, we think about God, and then 11 o'clock, we go back to the world. Or that at 9:15 to 9:45, we think about God. We need to think about the appropriate nature of our action at every moment. We need to think about the entirety of our relationship at every moment. Modern medicine in the United States has compartmentalized the human being. You go to see a nose doctor, you go to see an ear doctor, you go to see a wrist doctor, you go to see an ankle doctor, you go to see a liver doctor, you go to see a urologist, etc. We've done the same thing to our lives. In medicine, they're trying to introduce a holistic approach to medicine, where you take into consideration the entire body of a being, and you understand that each part is connected to the other part. Everything we do in our life is connected to our life. You don't wear the hat from your job, and then the hat from your home, and then your hat of being a mother or a father or a child or whatever. You're one being. And that being has to be represented in everything that you do. Whether you're treating patients, or you're talking to school children, or you're having a relationship with a man or a woman, you're the same being. All the qualities have to be right at every moment. And it's in that cognition that we have to stay on top of being appropriate, that we're going to find the right attitude so that we can have a relationship with God. And it's in that intention that we can be right in every moment with all of our fellow beings that we're going to be able to have a relationship with God. It's said that if you are with everybody but not with me, you are with nothing. But if you are with me, you are with everything. We need to begin to understand it. And we can't be thwarted by the fact that we don't understand it. And that's where faith comes in. We can't be upset by the fact that we haven't been shown visions. I remember once sitting with Bawa, and one of the translators was talking to him, and she said, you know, all these people come and tell you about all the visions they have and all the miracles they see, and I don't have any visions. And he looked at her and he said, you're sitting with me, aren't you? Here you are in the middle of one of the great miracles of God in front of you, a realized being sitting there with love flowing out of him, and you don't realize that you're in the midst of something special. You're looking for something that explodes? Fireworks? We have all of these ideas of what we need to see. What you need to see is change in yourself. What you need to feel is peace in yourself. What you need to do is become comfortable. Become comfortable with yourself, and soon God will be comfortable with you. Get to the point where you don't have regrets. And why don't you have regrets? Because you haven't done anything that's going to bring regrets. And what do you have to do not to do things that bring regrets? Watch what you're doing and ask, am I going to regret this? It ain't that hard. But for most of the world, it's almost impossible because they've turned off that part of themselves that questions themselves. We have to have that witness inside of us. We have to constantly look at our own acts. And when that intention comes to be appropriate, Allah will enforce it and will give us of Himself so that we can become more of ourself, because the great mystery is ourself and Him and the connection therein. And that mystery will become clearer and clearer and clearer, and we will be closer and closer to Him. Amin, amin, ya Rabbil Alameen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.